All right, and welcome to Juno Afternoon here on Fat Tuesday, Mardi Gras, March 4th, 2014. I'm Scott Burton. I'll be your host today. We got a great show. Jessica Campbell and Sarah Beth Goh will be here. They're a couple Nashville-based performers, been playing all over Juno. And we'll also hear from Elaine Schroeder and Laura Damron about guidance through grief support. And also Writer Showcase, Cheryl Snyder is going to be joining me in the studio to talk about that. Benjamin Ball of Ball Nogue Studio in Los Angeles will be here. He's part of the Bling Lecture Series in the Alaska Design Forum. Should be fun. Principal Kristen Garreau will be here. Writer's Almanac, Bird Note, music, and more here on a Juno afternoon today.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. A grassroots water restoration group on the Cheyenne River Reservation has been named a global affiliate of Village Earth. As Jim Kent reports, the Colorado-based nonprofit helps connect communities to resources around the world.
It's been 2 years since Candace Ducheneau began organizing members of the Swiftbird community to start the process of restoring water to their land.
I understood that we needed to do something. We could do something to help our lands, and I understood why they were this way because of the poor water management, and most especially these big dams here on the Missouri River.
Ducheneau notes that the creation of the dams not only inundated land the Lakota formerly thrived on, but upset the entire ecological system as it applies to the distribution of water. The problem, which Ducheneau says has created drought-stricken areas worldwide, can be corrected through proper water management and the creation of microdams or check dams. Of course, funding is required to create a water restoration system. That's where Village Earth comes in. David Bartecki is the group's executive director.
Our global affiliates are grassroots organizations who may not be 501c3 organizations themselves, but we serve as an umbrella that they can do fundraising and solicit grants using our 501c3 status.
Members of MANI hope to begin creating microdams on the Cheyenne River Sioux Reservation this spring. For National Native News, I'm James Kent.
A former tribal leader in Northern California pleaded not guilty Monday on charges of murder and attempted murder. A gun and knife attack last month at the Cedarville Rancheria headquarters led to the death of four people and wounded others. Sherry Lash Rhodes is allegedly responsible for attacking people at a meeting, which was considering her eviction. According to the Associated Press, the charges carry a potential death penalty. The Native American community turned out in masses in Kentucky to show support for Shoni and Jude Schimmel. The sisters play for the University of Louisville. They made headlines and their popularity grew last year during college championship games. Monday's game was Native American and Senior Night, Shoni one of the honorees. More than 1,000 Native people from across the country reportedly attended the game, which was lost against the University of Connecticut 68-48. A reservation high school known for its success in basketball is celebrating a state heavyweight wrestling champion. South Dakota Public Broadcasting's Gary Ellenbolt reports.
285, Sam Shoneman, Aberdeen Central. Jesse Trueblood from Pine Ridge.
It had already been a great season for Pine Ridge High School 285-pound wrestler Jesse Trueblood. The senior had lost only once in the regular season. Trueblood advanced to the championship match in South Dakota's Class A tournament Saturday night. His opponent was from Aberdeen Central High School, with an enrollment many times the size of Pine Ridge. Trueblood was trailing by several points late in the match when he scored two takedowns, each worth 2 points. His opponent scored 2 points on escapes in the third period. With 3 seconds remaining in that third period, the Aberdeen wrestler was called a second time for stalling, which gave Trueblood a 7th point and forced overtime. He scored a takedown in the sudden victory overtime period to get the win and the state championship. But the honors weren't done for the Pine Ridge Thorps. Trueblood was also named the most valuable wrestler for the entire tournament. His opponent's school, Aberdeen Central, did win the Class A team title. For National Native News, I'm Gary Ellenbolt.
Today we remember William Paul, who died on this day in 1977. The attorney was the first Alaska Native legislator who helped integrate public schools and win voting rights for Alaska Native people. This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kiwanis Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation. When you file online for your PFD, every Alaskan can support National Native News. Just use Pick, Click, Give and select KNBA-FM, Kiwanis Broadcast Corporation. With one donation at a time, good things will happen all over Alaska. The Convention and Tourism Department of the Albuquerque Hispano Chamber of Commerce provides convention and event planning services for Native American organizations. Information at ahcnm.org. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
All right, and welcome back to a Juno Afternoon. I've been joined in the studio by Dr. Elaine Schroeder, and today we're going to be talking about guidance through grief and bereavement support group. Elaine, welcome to the studio.
Thank you.
Very nice to have you. Thanks for coming in out of this beautiful day.
It is gorgeous.
Right?
I just took a walk on Sandy Beach.
Oh,
it was great.
Nice.
Yeah.
All right, so tell us a little bit about this group. Who's your target audience? What's it look like?
Well, I'll give you a little background. Hospice and Home Care of Juno has been sponsoring a twice-a-year bereavement support group for years and years, and I've been the leader for the last few years. It is a two-hour group that meets for eight consecutive weeks from 6:30 to 8:30 p.m. This one will begin March 18th, and it's a Tuesday evening. And we meet at the Bridge. And the Bridge is the senior daycare program that you can see when you're coming down Egan Drive. But we'll tell you where it is. It's a lovely location. Mm. So what's the point? The point is this is a group, a professionally led support group for individuals who've had a significant loss, who are in the process of grieving, and there's no deadline. I've had widows or widowers come in a year or two after their spouse died. I've had people who have lost children. The children have died. Individuals who had been caretaking a parent died. Siblings. Whatever, if it's significant to you and you are in a bereavement period and you want support, then this is the group for you.
All right. Wow. Basically, anybody who is being affected by the process of death is welcome.
That is, yeah, having significant grieving issues. For example, if one's 95-year-old mother dies and things were quite comfortable with the death, that person would not even feel like coming to a bereavement group, probably.
Right.
On the other hand, if you had been taking care of your parent day and night, you had been their primary care provider, that may be a different story. So really, everything is individual. And if you have any question about it, I will be happy to talk to you. You can contact hospice at 463-6109 or call me. I'm in the phone book. I'm at 586-6879. That's my office. And I will talk to everybody who's in the group beforehand to make sure it's appropriate for them.
Oh, right.
Yeah. So, in other words, I screen everybody. I talk to everybody before they're in the group. The group size is usually around 8 to 10 people. It's completely confidential.
Mm.
And
what can one expect? What's the atmosphere like in the group?
Well, all the groups, the personality of the group really changes from group to group.
I'll bet.
Some of my groups stay together after the 8 weeks are over. Just this weekend, I saw one of my recent groups. I think it was about a year ago, and I saw them, actually. I saw them at the AWARE dinner. They were all there as a group at the Women of Achievement dinner that AWARE sponsors, and I was so surprised to see them there.
Mm.
And they have been meeting for breakfast. They're the breakfast club now. And other groups don't bond. But what is the atmosphere? The atmosphere is very supportive.
Mm.
To be able to come to a group when you're going through a difficult grieving process and you don't want to burden your friends, you're really mentally okay, you don't need to really see a therapist, but to be able to talk to people who are going through similar things, who understand, it is wonderful.
I bet.
I know I love the work.
Mm.
I absolutely love the groups. I'm in private practice as a psychotherapist, and I love doing these groups. They're very rewarding.
What drew you to this field?
Probably the death of my own mother.
Mm.
When I was in my early 30s, both my parents died. My dad had a stroke, and my mom died of breast cancer. And you can imagine I was totally bereft to lose both of them within 9 months. And they were wonderful parents. And it was before I had gone to start graduate school. And so it had always been an area where, frankly, I felt comfortable.
Mm.
I had been through it.
Right.
And I was not afraid of dying, of other people dying. We'll have to look into myself, but I wasn't afraid of being present around death and dying. And I loved doing group work. And so then it became one of my specialties of working around bereavement and loss.
All right.
Yeah.
So this group meets at the bridge, the building there on Old Glacier Highway,
yeah,
right?
That's exactly it.
Up there, and like you say, it's south facing.
It's between town and downtown.
Yeah.
But closer to town.
That cool little section.
And it's a big building, but we'll tell you where it is.
Okay.
It's a beautiful environment, and I'm very thankful to Catholic Community Services for letting us use the building because it's like a home. It's a very warm place. And we have a potluck, the eighth meeting, and a lot of times people remain connected for quite a long time.
I bet.
After the group ends. For example, the group that was all together at a table at the award dinner Saturday night.
Bereavement and community building.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Friendship.
Totally.
Friendship building,
yeah.
Too.
And people might say, you know, isn't grieving a natural process? Why do you need a group? Well, the more support you have in bereavement, the better. So it isn't that I wasn't able to process my parents' loss, but losing my parents, and it was way before the hospice. It was right before the hospice movement started, so of course there weren't bereavement groups. And I, of course, I did work through this pretty sudden loss when I was pretty young of both parents. But it would have been wonderful if I had had a support group. It would have really been good.
Just to not feel alone.
Yeah.
In one of the most traumatic times of one's life, potentially, is dealing with death. Nobody wants to be alone.
Yeah.
So.
And my parents, when they died, were much younger than I am now. So I realized how young they, you know, how they died early.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Well, if this applies to you, you can meet with Dr. Elaine Schroeder first to learn more about this group that meets on Tuesdays at the Bridge. Sounds like a really healthy, confidential,
totally confidential
environment to help with the process of grieving and bereavement. Again, if you want more information, you can call Hospice at 463-6109. Or call Dr. Schroeder here directly at 586-6879.
And when you call hospice, ask for Laura.
Okay.
She'll be your contact
person.
Laura Dameron.
Yeah.
And then the group is free, and we suggest a donation of $80 for the series. But if that is unaffordable to you, do not let money be the barrier to coming.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, thank you for your time, Dr. Schroeder. Anything else you'd like to add?
That's good.
All right. Thanks for your time today.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Oh. 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 I don't know exactly.
exactly where this is gonna go. We're kids in the city, we don't wanna be alone. We're tearing down signs and putting up our own. Well, pick me up at 7 o'clock, boy. Bring me a flower, let's enjoy the evening. You look so nice in your plaid bow tie. And you look so fresh in your Sunday best. I like the way you walk and I like the way you speak. I like how you listen when you look at me. We kind of work well as kids in the city. Well, pick me up at 10 a.m. and bring me a coffee. Kiss me again. This is gonna go. We're kids in the city, we don't wanna be alone. We're putting up signs and looking for home. Well, kiss me on the forehead, boy. Walk me to my door and good night.
I barely remember when you slipped.
Welcome back to a Juno Afternoon. I've been joined in the studio by Cheryl Levitt-Snyder. Welcome.
Hi, Scott. Thanks for having me in today.
You're welcome. And you and I are the co-producers of A Writer's Showcase.
Yeah, so I'm glad that we can take this opportunity to talk about this today. The Writer's Showcase is having its second program on Thursday night, and this is a show that we invite members of the community to come down to our studio here and be a part of the audience. But let's explain a little bit what Writer's Showcase is and where it came from and why we're doing it.
Absolutely. So it's in this new At 360 space, which we can get to in a second. But we've been asked to create more content for 360 North and K2 and KRNN, and among our projects that we've taken on is a Writer's Showcase. And I have a background in writing. I love writing. I teach writing. I spend a lot of time writing. And I thought that this would be a good way for me to contribute to our content, a show that solicits writing from aspiring Alaskan writers and also published Alaskan writers. And then we mix that together. And then on the model of NPR's Selected Shorts, we get actors to read these pieces. So that's where Writer's Showcase came from. You and I played around with that idea, right?
Yeah. I think going back to the summer, we've been thinking about it. And Selected Shorts is one of my favorite programs that we have on. If you've not heard it, it's on Tuesday nights at 8 o'clock. And it's set in New York City is where it's produced. And you can actually, if you're in the city on a Tuesday night, you can go and be a part of the audience for that. But they have these really great actors read from great short stories. And most of what they're reading as part of that show is short fiction stories. And with what we've created is absolutely a spin-off of that. I wish I could say it was totally original idea. Scott and I just nailed it home with this, but we took their idea and we're running with it and we're putting the Alaska stamp on it. And it's been interesting, Scott, because we've had now two rounds of soliciting for stories and we are looking for writers from all over the state. And mostly what we've gotten is either personal short stories of people writing about experiences they've had, or we've had sort of essay style pieces come in, and we haven't gotten a lot of real true fiction pieces in yet.
Right. Maybe we haven't gotten to the fiction stage in writing in Alaska yet. There's still much, so much interesting stuff happening here that we don't need to do that. But anyway, so we have our show coming up this Thursday, and we would love to have as many of you come down and be part of the TV audience.
Yep, that's great. So we're going to open the doors at 6:30. It's pay as you can. And then we'll start our recording for broadcast right at 7 o'clock. And when you come down on Thursday night, you'll hear four different pieces being read. The first is by Rich Chapone, and it's a really funny story about, this is a fiction piece. It's about a guy who is just itching come March to get out on the water and start fly fishing, but he's writing from up north and it is solid, cold, frozen winter still. And it's a very funny, really funny, would you call it an expose?
and he's practicing his fly fishing with his cats.
Yes, in the backyard.
But no cats are harmed, we assure you.
So anyways, it is a great piece, and that's going to be read by Brandon Demery. The next piece on the lineup is a really beautiful piece of writing by Sherry Simpson, and Christina Apathy is going to read that. And how would you describe that one, Scott?
The piece is called Natural History, or What Happens When We're Not Looking. And it takes place, I think, in the Juneau area, or at least South Central, somewhere in islandy, inside style waters. Sherry Simpson is a master writer. Whatever she writes about is good. Here's a sentence. The shells of blue bay mussels scatter in pearly constellations, and chalky steamer clams rest in the moss like weathered bones. A few drops of rainwater pool in lustrous curves that once kept briny, living flesh. The water spills across my hands as I turn the shells over, fingering their coolness. So that's the kind of writing that's in this piece. It's out of her book called The Way Winter Comes, and we're excited to have Christina Apathy read this one.
And then the next piece by Tim Lash, if you want to talk about that one.
Absolutely. Local writer Tim Lash is going to be, he's written a piece called The Figure in the Purple Jacket. And this is an interesting piece that explores Willy Wonka, Gene Wilder, and Jesus.
And it is so incredibly well told. Just when I first read the story, Scott, you brought it to me, and just the first two sentences automatically just grab you and bring you in, and then it's a really wonderful personal reflection and some insights that come from places that you might not expect. So I really love this piece a lot, and I'm excited to hear Corin Hughes Scandies read it tonight. The last piece that we have on the lineup tonight is by Greg Capito. He is from Juneau, and his story is going to be read by Roblin Gray Davis. And it's a really interesting story. I believe it's an actual account of experiences that he had as a young man up north, and sort of the maybe sort of the ego and brashness of a young man, which he learns a really big life lesson and something that he can't undo and he can't make it right. The only thing he can do is learn to be a bigger, better person going forward. And it's really poignant and also quite funny and just really well told. So I'm really looking forward to hearing the reading of that as well.
All right, so just to recap for y'all, that's this Thursday night, Writer's Showcase. Doors open at 6:30. It's a pay-as-you-can event. The cameras roll at 7. It'll take 1 hour. And, you know, we love having audience there, just like going to a play or, you know, a movie. Having that collective experience makes it better for everyone. I know Tim Lash is going to be there, one of our writers. I know Greg's going to be there with friends and family. So come out and say hi to the writers and support them. Support these wonderful actors. So lucky to be working with them. Would you add anything, Cheryl?
Yeah, and I would just say we are going to be doing these once a quarter. And as soon as we get this show recorded on Thursday night, we're going to start recruiting for pieces for our next theme, which is the theme is endurance. So pay attention on our website. We'll have information there at ktoo.org and 360north.org. If you are a writer or know a writer, we are looking for writers from around the state to be a part of this. So the next theme is endurance, and get a hold of us if you'd like to submit.
And maybe a shout-out for fiction. We need
some
more
fiction pieces. We need some really good fiction pieces. It'd be wonderful.
Too. But we love creative nonfiction as well. All right, Cheryl, thank you for your time today.
Thanks, Scott.
We're going to go out here with a clip that Christina Apathy read last time, and this is from Heather Lendy's piece, All is Bright and Not So Calm for the Holidays in Haines. And Christina read this as part of our holiday show back in December.
I was nostalgic and looking forward to this first, more traditional Christmas celebration. The choir had prepared Hark the Herald Angels and O Come All Ye Faithful in four-part harmony. But rather than robes, we wore coats, snow pants, hats, and headlamps to see the music with. We stood in the inky dark behind Tresham Gregg's art shop at the bottom of the parade grounds, waiting for the cannon to trigger the lighting of the 100-year-old homes surrounding the field. The only lights were candles in the milk jugs outlining the sledding hill. Then, from somewhere up by the flagpole, Jim Shook hollered, "Cover your ears!" We did. Nothing happened. Yes, Shook really is his name, and you'll see in a minute how perfect it is. "Cover your ears!" Jim yelled again. One woman who was new in town wondered if that was necessary since we were a couple hundred yards away and it was a toy cannon, right? Actually, Jim's 3,000-pound cannon was originally designed to launch harpoons from whaling ships. Each firing, the 4th of July, Memorial Day, and now the lighting of the fort, requires a pound of black powder and a pile of old blue jeans. Jim packs the barrel with rags. Denim works best. Lights the fuse and waits for the big bang. One time, he shot a pair of Levi's clear over Tresham's shop, probably the farthest any pair of jeans has ever flown. After Jim's third, "Cover your ears!" there was a huge kaboom, followed by stunned wows. The ground shifted. I felt the concussion on my face. The background was dazzlingly bright as all the Christmas lights came on.
All right. Yeah, you can grab those ones right there. Welcome back to a Juno afternoon. We just heard from Christina Apathy. Reading there is for the Writer Showcase coming up this Thursday night. Now I am lucky enough to be joined in the studio by Sarah Beth Goh. We, at the top of the hour, or pretty close to it anyway, we heard Kids in the City and the Backroads off of her CD. Welcome to the studio, Sarah.
Hello, thank you.
Yeah, can you hear me over there?
Yeah, I think so. No, I can't. I'm saying that to, let's see, check. Yes, I can hear you. Yes, okay. That's great.
Cool. Well, thanks for coming in on a beautiful day.
It's beautiful outside.
Eagles.
I saw 10 at least today.
Churches.
I found the church I'm getting married in. I texted my mom. I'm so excited.
Looking for places to rent in Juneau. Because it's always like this in the spring.
I found my place to get married. Now all I need is my man to get married to.
All right, Sarah, you want to play a tune for us?
Sure. This song is called Wish It Had. It's the title track of my most recent album that I released a few months ago. You're making it very easy to hate you and erase our story. I shouldn't have read your letter. I should have known better that you would be so cold. I thought that we'd grow old the day your mother told me I was pretty. Now it's such a pity. Ooh. It happened beneath the table. You held my hand and I felt able to let you right into my life. I shouldn't have. My shirt was black and white, and so were we that night. It was so clear, so right. I had to linger and hold on to your fingers. Ooh. Oh, 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 oh. November, you said I love you, then shook your head like you didn't mean to. You thought that your love would scare me. I wish it had. I wish it had. I wish it had.
All right, what a beautiful piece.
Thank you.
And you wrote all the songs on your album, is that right?
Yeah, I did. I'll tell you a story about it. I went into the studio and had a bunch of songs on there, and I had a bunch of songs ready to record, and we recorded three songs. I took a brief pause to get into a relationship with this boy. We dated for a while. We ended up breaking up. He actually dumped me. And then I had 7 brand new songs, and they all went on the album.
Wow. I didn't know so much good can come from a breakup, a dumping.
He dumped me. I have a song on there called Worst New Year's Ever.
Ooh.
He dumped me on New Year's Eve.
That's rough.
Yeah. But it's more upbeat than it sounds. I like for people to laugh at my pain. So please laugh with me.
Well, beautiful guitar playing and singing, too.
Thank you. You've
been singing for a long time.
I've been singing for a long time. I don't really play guitar. This is actually, that's me strumming the guitar without holding anything because it's an open tuning because I actually play piano. I'm not a guitar player, truly. This is fake
well, you
playing
faked
guitar.
It really well.
Yeah, I've been told that before. I'm a faker.
And so Jessica's not with us here in the studio today, but when you two play together, what's your instrumentation and how do you play piano in that?
Yeah, I play piano, and Jessica, who's a very, very talented musician, plays guitar. And in Nashville, we do this thing called Writers in the Round, and basically it's a round of songwriters. So it's like we're literally sitting in a round. It's usually four or five people,
mm-hmm.
and everybody takes a turn. You go around in a circle. So we kind of do that, just us two, and we go back and forth. So we get to maintain our artistry, and we get to support each other at the same time. So I'll play piano with her sometimes, and she'll play shakers or she'll play a tom drum with me if we have access to it. Obviously, we weren't able to fly with a tom drum out to Alaska, but she'll sing background vocals with me. I'll sing with her, and then we get to display our songs and just make the best use of each other's talents on each of our songs. It's really cool.
Yeah, it sounds like a nice collaboration.
Yeah, it's awesome.
How did you two meet?
We played a Writers in the Round a few years ago, and I think we were both like, oh, who's this other girl? And mm-hmm. and then we decided about a year ago she was looking for someone to tour with, and I was looking to tour a little bit more, and she's super organized, and I'm quite the opposite of that. And so I said, hey, can you help me to learn the ways? And she has since. We've been touring together, booking shows together. We do a lot of house shows. So we go into people's homes, and we like to pack out a living room, and it kind of forces people to listen because it's too awkward to talk to other people when you're in a quiet living room.
Right. You know? Opposite of house shows, you played at the Alaskan Bar last night.
Yeah, we were talking about it a few minutes ago, which was totally great. And the most I've never heard of a bear actually walking into a bar, which I know is like old news to you, but I'm still freaking out about the fact that a bear walked into a bar. And obviously it's just old news to everybody that hears it in Alaska, but
you met Riptide Red.
I met Riptide Red. He put money in the tip jar and set it down very purposefully and requested a song that we didn't know, but we played a song and dedicated it to him. We played Dream by the Everly Brothers, and we said, this one's for you, Red. And he kind of went, huh? And we sang the song for him, and then he goes, ho, ho, ho. So we think that was an affirmation.
I think that's a good thing.
Yeah, maybe he's like, yeah, something about Santa in Alaska and cold, and he has a beard or something. I don't know.
And tell me how this tour came about. Who's responsible for bringing you two up?
Well, we have a friend named John Weaver who has family that lives in Alaska.
Okay.
And he connected us with them. And actually, Doug, I'm assuming his last name is Weaver because John's last name is Weaver. Doug Weaver lives out here. He's also a dentist, and so I get a special dentist visit today because I think I have a rotting tooth in the back of my mouth that I was joking about yesterday, and John said, maybe we can set that up. And I said, are you serious? Because that would be fantastic. So I may be having numb mouth tonight at the concert.
Speaking of tonight's concert, you're playing out mm-hmm. at the University of Alaska Southeast's Rec Center.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
Phil Paramore is a DJ here. He coordinates stuff out there. He's a great guy. And that's always a fun time out there. And mm-hmm. I heard free pizza.
Free pizza, so come, and it's a free show.
Right.
So you're not going to miss out on anything. But with all that money that you save, you can spend money on our CDs and T-shirts, and we have lots of product that's shiny and new. And you know, the great thing about CDs these days is that a lot of people aren't using them anymore because cars and computers aren't made with them, but they make for really great coasters.
Mm-hmm. A lot of ours get used in your window. You can hang them from a fishing line, and they spin, and then birds won't hit your window.
And if you have annoying ex-boyfriends, you can blind them with the sun, or you can burn ant piles probably, too.
Or you can dedicate the whole CD to that ex-boyfriend.
Which I did.
All right. So last night was at the Alaskan. Tonight is at UAS. You did a couple house concerts over the weekend. Was that right? Or?
Yeah, February 19th, we flew into San Francisco and traveled up the coast all the way up to Seattle two nights ago, and flew out of Seattle yesterday morning, and have since been doing house concerts and a couple gigs at bars and venues, but mostly house concerts. And then we fly back tomorrow, and we'll fly out of San Francisco on March 10th. And so you can check out our websites, minesarahbethgo.com. And I'll give you a little trick to remember that, because Sarah Beth in New York makes this delicious jelly. You know, so I say, if you want jelly, go to sarahbeth.com. But if you want to jam, go to sarahbethgo.com.
All right.
And jessicacampbellmusic.com is Jessica Campbell's music.
All right. Sounds good. So let's see. I have both of your CDs queued up right
cool.
now. You have your guitar. Should we play something that might be indicative of what we might hear tonight at UAS?
Yeah.
Your choice. What should we play?
You know, you played a couple of mine earlier, right?
Right.
Sure.
Mm-hmm.
Do you want to, should we play one of Jessica's?
Yeah, let's do it.
All right. I know yesterday she requested something about trains. So maybe
there
you
it
can
is,
play that.
Number
yeah.
seven.
Number seven.
All right. Time. Well, Sarah Beth, thank you so much for your time today.
Yeah.
I'm glad you had a good trip.
Yeah.
And a free dentist visit.
Yeah. I hope I don't bleed. I do floss, so hopefully I won't bleed.
Well, good luck tonight. I'm sure it'll be a great time.
Yeah,
thanks for coming in.
Thank you so much.
There's just something about trains that makes me wanna run away. My granddaddy used to say, must be something in our veins. Yeah, he knew a thing or two. There's just something about trains. Sometimes I've got to get off the ground, get lost to get found and be free. Sometimes my mind goes wild if I don't pick up my feet. There's just something about the sea.
We just heard a piece there from Jessica Campbell. She'll be playing tonight at the UAS Recreation Center. That was a track called Something About Trains. And we also, of course, heard from Sarah Beth Go there before that. Joining me now in the studio is Evelyn Russo of the Alaska Design Forum and Benjamin Ball of Noguez Studios in Los Angeles. Welcome, you two.
Hello.
Hi.
It's nice to have you here. Thanks. I've been thanking everyone for coming in on such a beautiful day here in Juneau, although I suspect it's still a little cold for Los Angeles weather. Benjamin?
Not really.
I heard you've been getting some rain and stuff down there, right?
It's been, yeah. But I jetted up here before it really began, so I haven't been there for the kind of apocalyptic problems that are happening.
Evelyn, can you tell us a little bit about the Alaska Design Forum?
The Alaska Design Forum is a nonprofit organization that's mission is to promote discussion about the built environment in our state. And every year we bring a lecture series to Alaska. We bring lecturers from all over the world to Juneau, Fairbanks, and Anchorage to talk about what their work and interact with people in those communities. That's pretty much what we do.
All right. And this year's series, or this series in particular, is the Bling series. Is that right?
Yeah, we always have themes every year for what we're doing. And we thought it would be, in the past few years, we've done some fairly serious topics. And not that bling isn't serious, but we thought it would be interesting to really look at the role of ornament in design and materiality and how that materiality can become design or an aesthetic and that kind of play of materials and form to create design.
Sure, and Benjamin, that's where you come in. I went to your website today and just saw some of your work. It's extraordinary, beautiful stuff. Can you describe for some of my listeners some of the stuff that you do?
Well, our work falls somewhere in between public art and architecture projects. We have also done a lot of work that might be called temporary architecture. So it's a pretty diverse set of projects, but something that unifies them is really an interest in craft and how things are made, and how that could impact the aesthetics and function of these things that we make.
Okay. All right. By any chance, have you had a chance to see our new museum going up out there?
I saw it going up.
Yes. It's still a long way to go.
Yes.
I was looking at those outside panels. They're sort of a metal siding. Would that be something that you would be into, or is it something a little less permanent?
Well, you know, we would be interested in that if we were doing a building, maybe.
Okay.
But we're working on one building, and that's one building among maybe a dozen projects.
Okay.
So the skin of a building is something that we would be interested in. We'd be interested in how you make that, how you can push that as an idea and maybe move it beyond what we've seen in the past and what we've seen conventionally in architecture.
All right. And tonight you'll be speaking as part of this series over at the Goldtown Nickelodeon Theater, a nice cozy spot to give a talk. What are some of the things you'll be covering tonight?
I'm going to talk about the history of our work. I'm going to talk about our interest in production and in making things.
Mm-hmm.
We are an integrated design and fabrication outfit.
Okay.
And so the production and how something is made is as interesting a story, perhaps, as some of the work in its final result, the final result.
Sure. All right. Well, that sounds interesting. I have a question for you, if I may. Sometimes I look at craft and I look at art, and I wonder, when does craft transcend and become art? Is there a difference? Do you have any opinions on that?
I think it has to do with the intentions behind it. Craft is a really vague term, probably as vague as art is.
Right.
And you would have to define what you mean by craft, and in what sense of the term, what sense are you using the word craft?
Sure.
I think sometimes it gets a really bad name when it's used in reference to sort of handicraft. or things that are, but then it also has a kind of high, this sort of higher sense that some people give it when it's closer to art.
Right.
And there's a lot of politics involved in those terms.
Sure.
So I think you have to be very particular about how you define craft and in what sense of the word you're in what sense you're using the word.
All right. Like anything, just be specific.
Yeah.
Don't have a hasty generalization or just label something. Just describe it as best you can.
Right.
All right, and I suspect you'll show some slides tonight.
A lot of them.
Cool. And, again, I saw some of the work on your website. Very colorful, good-looking, functional, fun to look at. So that's tonight at the Goldtown Nickelodeon. I believe, Evelyn, do I have it right? 6 p.m.? Sound about
that's
right?
That's correct.
All right. Well, Evelyn Russo, Benjamin Ball, thank you so much for coming into the studio, and good luck with your talk tonight.
Thank you so much, Scott.
You're welcome. We are going right now to listen to a writer's almanac.
And here is the writer's almanac for Tuesday, the 4th of March, 2014. It's the anniversary of the admission of Vermont to the Union in 1791. It was the 14th state to join. Vermont, which for its first 200 years voted Republican in every single presidential election except 1964, when it voted for Lyndon Johnson. But since 1992, it's voted Democratic in every presidential election. It competes with New Hampshire for being the least religious state in the Union. Only half of Vermonters say they believe in God, compared with about 70% of the rest of the country. It's the birthday of the novelist Thomas Stribling, born Clifton, Tennessee, 1881. He started out writing pulp fiction for magazines, detective stories, science fiction. Loved Venezuela. He wrote three novels set there in the 20s, and then won the Pulitzer Prize with his novel The Store, a satire of the Jim Crow South. Thomas Stribling was a contemporary of Faulkner and Hemingway, and his books sold better than theirs. Between the end of World War I and the beginning of World War II, Thomas Stribling was America's best-selling author. 1797, on this day, John Adams was inaugurated second president of the United States, succeeding George Washington, beating out his rival Thomas Jefferson. Ceremony took place on a sunny day, Philadelphia, at Congress Hall. Adams, dressed in a gray suit, a short, frumpy man. Jefferson, tall and elegant, in a long blue frock coat. Washington, dressed in black velvet. Franklin D. Roosevelt inaugurated on this day, 1933, in the midst of the Depression. Most Americans didn't know how crippled he was from polio, and he tried to keep it a secret, so in order for him to ascend the steps to the podium to take the oath of office, he went up a series of ramps that were hidden behind barriers, walked the last few yards leaning on the arm of his son James, and made it look easy, even though it took great strength. His inaugural address included the famous phrase, "The only thing we have to fear is fear itself." Here's a poem for today, a poem by Billy Collins, entitled Searching. I recall someone once admitting that all he remembered of Anna Karenina was something about a picnic basket. And now, after consuming a book devoted to the subject of Barcelona, its people, its history, its complex architecture, all I remember is the mention of an albino gorilla, the inhabitant of a park where the citadel of the Bourbons once stood. The sheer paleness of her looms over all the notable names and dates as the evening strollers stop before her and point to show their children. These locals called her Snowflake, and here she has been mentioned again in print, in the hope of keeping her pallid flame alive and helping her, despite her name, to endure in this poem, where she has found another cage. Oh, snowflake, I had no interest in the capital of Catalonia, its people, its history, its complex architecture. No, you were the reason I kept my light on late into the night, turning all those pages, searching for you everywhere. Searching, a poem by Billy Collins from his collection Aimless Love, published by Random House, and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by Lumosity.
All right. Thank you, Garrison Keeler. And you're back listening to A Juno Afternoon here on March 4th, 2014. And I've been joined in the studio by Principal Kristen Garreau of Yakusuke Zakihiri, and also joined by two students from the school. We have Jonah Graves and Manuel Macias. Welcome, everybody.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Let's see. I make sure I have your mic on over there. And I do. So today we're here to talk about a couple of things, and maybe Principal Garreau, would you like to start?
Sure. We're here just to kind of give a shout-out to some things that are happening at Yakusuke Zakihiri. And I came earlier this spring, and so I was like, I should come back and bring some kids.
Yeah.
So they're here to talk about a few of the things that they're involved in.
All right. And let's see. Jonah, do you want to start? Some university connections you're involved with, maybe.
Yeah. I'm currently enrolled in the Intro to Mining class. It's headed by Mike Bell, who's our teacher. It's offered out at the university by Greens Creek, or Hecla Greens Creek. They're, what the goal of the class for us is to just look at all, like, the careers and everything that's totally out at the mine, like even like above ground, not underground. We're just looking at everything, like core drillers, diesel mechanics, even like cooks and chefs, everybody, a whole line of people that work out at the mine. And hopefully through this class, if we do really good, there's a Hecla Academy going on first 2 weeks of June, and we'll get our MSHA certification, and we'll get to go out there, and even they offer internships for students, and if they like us, we can either get a job or they'll help pay for my college. So, it's really cool.
So are you actually going out to the mine for class, or are they bringing information to you?
No, this year it was over at the UAS Tech Center across from JDHS, but now it's out at the Egan Library at the main campus. But, yeah, it's not at the mine. We are going to do a tour towards the end of our class out at Greens Creek, though.
All right. Sounds very practical and interesting. And
yeah, it's pretty sweet. I like it.
Yeah, and it sounds like that's what you want to be when you grow up.
Yeah.
All right. Not that you're not already grown up. I still say that myself, what I'm going
to
be when I grow up.
I have to jump in and do a quick plug for that. The course that Jonah takes he's able to take that because of funding for the Alaska Youth First grant through the Department of Labor, which is right now on the chopping block through the budget process. And we want things like this to continue. So these are great opportunities our students have. So if you have an opinion about that, let your opinion be known.
Please do. And Jonah, or excuse me, Manuel, you tell us about the school. Tell us about Yakusuke.
Well, I was probably rolled in Yakusuke in beginning of the school year. I was in JDHS before that, and really, it's just a wonderful experience going to Yakusuke. The teachers are very attentive, you know. Every single one is really unique and really special to me and to the school. I'm really happy to be part of Yakusuke, to be honest. You know, most people get a different side, maybe a different view of Yakusuke when they actually hear it. But for me, it's just, you know, it's a wonderful feeling to be a part of that.
Wow, it sounds like you're part of a community there, maybe.
Pretty much, yeah. They do care for me, and as much as the next guy next to me, any students, you know, and they're very good listeners. They're your friends as well, you know, so it's an awesome feeling.
Sometimes at bigger high schools, we can feel anonymous, right?
Yeah, you feel distant, you know, and these guys make you feel like you're part of the family. So that's,
right.
That's a wonderful feeling too.
Well, I'm glad it's working out for you. That's great. Well, again, I wish we had more time, you three.
Well, it's nice to jump in for a second and remind folks of some of the things we've got going on.
All right, you three, Principal Kristen Garreau, Jonah Graves, and Manuel Macias, thank you so much for your time today. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you.
All right, and that's it for a Juno Afternoon today here on March 4th, 2014. Tune in tomorrow, Wednesday. Ken Fix will be the host. You're listening to 104.3 KTOO-FM in your capital city. We will join now with All Things Considered.